From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Possessing small amounts of cannabis was decriminalized in Maryland 4 years ago, but more than 10 grams is still a misdemeanor, and recent data show that in Baltimore, nearly all those arrested are Black. Journalist Brandon Soderberg, who crunched the numbers, noted the data comes as Baltimore faces serious challenges in criminal justice.
If this is how they're policing something that I think most of us agree is not an important thing to be policing, then how are they policing more serious crimes? What you see in cannabis, you're probably going to see in a lot of other ways they're arresting people.
Then former state police major Neil Franklin of the Law Enforcement Action Partnership tells us why he's now dedicated to reforming drug policies. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at WYPR.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@WYPR.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. A recent article from the online news site Baltimore Fishbowl revealed that since 2014, when possession of 10 grams or less of cannabis was decriminalized in Maryland, the people being arrested for possession in Baltimore City are still overwhelmingly African American. Baltimore Fishbowl analyzed 3 years of arrest data in collaboration with the Baltimore Institute for Nonprofit Journalism and data researcher Andy Friedman. Here to talk us through the analysis and its findings is journalist Brandon Soderberg, who reported the story for the Fishbowl with Ethan McLeod. Soderberg is also co-author of the book I've Got a Monster about the corruption and trial of the Baltimore City Police Department's Gun Trace Task Force, to be published later this year by St. Martin's Press. Welcome back to On the Record, Brandon.
Well, thanks for having me.
First, how did this project come about?
This began when myself and Ethan McLeod from the Baltimore Fishbowl were just kind of talking about where cannabis was. This is about almost a year ago in terms of where it had been decriminalized since 2014, October 2014. And into 2017, you started to see a lot of dispensaries popping up and medicinal cannabis became very popular. And so we really were curious, how has it affected arrests and policing of cannabis in the city? And we basically just began looking into the data, and we wanted to have a data researcher. We felt like it should be data-driven because one thing would be, perhaps more than other stories, both Ethan and I might be seen as conflicted. He reports on cannabis and the cannabis industry. I review weed for the Colorado Springs Independent, so we're not exactly, and I think I certainly feel for myself, I strongly believe unabashedly in legalizing, and I think that's what we should do. So we wanted to have a data-oriented element of it.
So what data did you look at?
So the data we looked at was arrests that were currently happening for cannabis possession over 10 grams, which is what is now considered misdemeanor cannabis possession. So as of October 2014, if you have under 10 grams of cannabis, you would get a civil citation and a fine. If you have more than that, you could be arrested. You could go to jail. And the threshold there is more than 10 grams up to 50 pounds of weed is kind of all one misdemeanor possession. Certainly over 50 or near 50, that might get pushed to a federal case. But that over 10 grams to 50 pounds is now a misdemeanor possession. Anything under 10 grams is just a ticketable offense. And so we wanted to see what was happening with how they were policing cannabis in the city. And we wanted to look at citations. So where are people being cited for smoking, which is just, hey, you have a joint, you have this ticket, you have to pay a $1,000 fine or whatever. And then we also wanted to see who was being hit with actual possession and who was doing jail time for cannabis as we have medicinal, in which, if you have certain ailments with medicinal cannabis in Maryland, you can possess up to 132 grams at a time. So if you have a medicinal card and certain ailments allow you, if a police officer pulled you over, you had a great amount of weed in your car, if you show them that card, you're okay. And so...
So how did you go about getting the data that would answer these questions?
So we began filing public information requests to the Baltimore Police Department, which is mostly, there's the Public Information Request Act. And we basically asked them for citations and arrests. And that data, without boring too many people, was very messy. And the police were they were surprisingly hesitant to help us out and provide us with that data. And there's some public information requests we asked that they never fulfilled, which means they're in violation of the Public Information Act request law. But The main thing we wanted to know was we wanted to have, where are people being arrested? Where are they being cited for it? And we wanted to map that out and see if it played out in the ways we expected it to play out, which was, were parts of the city being policed more heavily as they are in any, all of these other ways with cannabis.
And so you looked at the 3 years, the full years.
Yeah, we wanted
since decriminalization of small amounts.
So we did 2015, 2016, and 2017.
And found what?
And found that 96% of cannabis possession arrests, misdemeanor cannabis possession arrests in Baltimore are of Black people. So that's almost all of them. Very few white people are being arrested for cannabis in any form in this city.
The arrest data gives you the race of the arrestee?
So the data the police provided us did not give us the race. Open data, Baltimore does provide the race, but what the police gave us didn't give the race. So what we then did with Andy Friedman, our data researcher, was map the arrest out by zip code, which we did receive from the police. It didn't have the erase, but it did have where the arrest happened. We mapped that out, and then we applied census data to those zip codes and like located that majority Black zip codes are having the most cannabis arrest, and majority or almost entirely white zip codes are having the least cannabis arrests.
So you're very confident in the 96% conclusion, 96% African-American.
Yes, absolutely.
And the cannabis arrests you looked at, possession arrests, include charges for other more serious crimes?
So they may, but we also consulted FBI data, which the police provide the FBI with arrest data every year, and then you requested the FBI for that data. And so for 2017, for example, we're able to look at what was the highest of the, if you were charged with multiple crimes, what was the highest crime that they were the most significant crime, and most of those were cannabis. So, you know, if you had a gun charge as well as a weed charge, that would not have shown up in this FBI data we gave. So we were consulting three different forms of data, one given to us by from the police, one from the FBI, and one from Open Data Baltimore. And so by cross-referencing all those, we sort of allowed it all to play out, and we saw these same disproportionate arrests in all of those data. So from the FBI data, which is the most strongest consistent data, would be that over the past, those 2015, 2016, and 2017, combination of adults and juveniles, 1,514 people were charged with misdemeanor possession. And of those, 1,450 were Black. So that's 96%. That's where we have that number. That's kind of our lead in the story, the most staggering. So 96 out of every 100 people who are arrested for cannabis are Black, which is disproportionate. I mean, I don't think I need to say this, but there's endless data that shows that African Americans don't smoke more weed than white people, and that kind of stuff. So there's no discrepancy in terms. There's no justification for this or explanation for this data discrepancy besides disproportionately arresting Black people in Baltimore for weed.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with journalist and author Brandon Soderberg. We're talking about a data analysis of arrests for cannabis possession in Baltimore that revealed disproportionately high arrests among African Americans. Take a minute to unpack legal possession. Currently in Maryland, one can legally possess 10 grams of cannabis, about a handful. Is that a common legal amount across the country where possession has been decriminalized?
It's the lowest threshold that's been established where it's been decriminalized. Most places where it's decriminalized, it's 14 grams, which is a little more and kind of a normal, about a half an ounce. And then 28 grams is a very common, which is about an ounce of weed. That's more common. So we have the lowest threshold in terms of other decriminalized states. A few other states have it at 10 grams. But most have it significantly higher. So that's also something to consider.
Well, I was going to ask, I mean, would adjusting the legal amount of cannabis possession rectify the arrest picture?
Any way you increase that threshold to people being able to legally possess more, you will have less arrests. If you move it up to the 14-gram threshold, anyone who has 11, 12, 13, or 14 will not be arrested for misdemeanor anymore, and then they won't possibly serve jail time for it. So one fix would be to increase that threshold. It certainly would help. Legalization would also help.
Well, it would reduce the numbers. Do you think it would change the racial picture of who gets arrested?
I want to say probably not, just because, and the reason I say that is because the police weren't particularly responsive to, they didn't really ultimately comment on the arrest. They haven't had a comment since. This piece has been out for a few weeks now, and I don't see a lot of interest in changing this. And I say that because we thought cannabis was an interesting way to look at it because it's a window into how they probably police, or certainly do police, more serious crimes. Like, if this is how they're policing something that I think most of us agree is not an important thing to be policing, then how are they policing more serious crimes? How is that? That what you see in cannabis, you're probably going to see in a lot of other ways they're arresting people. So less people would go to jail, but I think the disproportionate side, until I hear something from the police that acknowledges this concern, you know, we're still fighting over this consent decree based on the Department of Justice's investigation, which also said this, essentially the same thing, that the city is disproportionately arresting African Americans for drug crimes, including cannabis. So I don't see a lot of interest in changing that.
And what has the Baltimore Police Department said about your findings?
Well, they argue, former BPD spokesman T.J. Smith argued with them a great deal. And he was actually very helpful, though, because he made us triple check all of our data before we published this. But his argument was basically like, we're not arresting these people for only cannabis, so your information is misrepresentative. That's why we consulted the FBI data that showed that what former spokesman T.J. Smith said was incorrect. Then indeed, when the highest crime among crimes someone arrested for is cannabis, that's the majority of the arrests. So, and then T.J. Smith also told us to look at the location of citations. He thought that would be, he felt that would be the most clear way to understand how it's being sort of policed or how it's changed. And the police refused to ever honor our public information request. So I don't have the ability right now in any way to map out citations. And then the current spokesman, Matt Jablow, after emails for a few weeks, refused to comment. They just provided no comment. And also the state's attorney's office, which would have the ability to reduce or deprioritize cannabis arrests. Larry Krasner, who's the district attorney in Philadelphia, he has really ordered the police there and the courts there to stop worrying about cannabis possession. So I kind of asked State's Attorney Mosby and her office about whether they would consider doing that, and they also gave us no comment. So the two primary law enforcement of the city that would have any way to assist in putting less people in jail for weed are not interested in commenting publicly on it, at least to me.
I really appreciate your walking us through it, Brandon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Journalist and author Brandon Soderberg and data researcher Andy Friedman did an extensive data analysis project conducted by the Baltimore Fishbowl in collaboration with the Baltimore Institute for Nonprofit Journalism. The report reveals a disproportionate number of cannabis possession arrests among African Americans in Baltimore. Quick break now, and then we'll ask a 34-year police veteran why he's now dedicated to reforming failed drug war policies. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about drugs, incarceration, and criminal justice. Earlier, we heard from Brandon Soderberg about research on the disproportionate number of African Americans arrested for cannabis possession in Baltimore City, even after decriminalization laws changed. Joining us now by phone is retired Police Major Neil Franklin, Executive Director of the nonprofit Law Enforcement Action Partnership, or LEAP. Part of LEAP's mission is to promote alternatives to arrest and incarceration and to improve police-community relations. In the Maryland State Police for 23 years, Franklin worked as a narcotics agent and other beats. In 2000, he joined the Baltimore Police Department as head of its education and training section. Since 2010, he's dedicated his time to work with LEAP. Welcome to On the Record, Neil.
Sheila, thanks for having me back.
So first tell us, after more than three decades in law enforcement, what led to your work with LEAP? What changed in your thinking?
Well, it's really interesting. When I was with the Baltimore Police Department as a head of training, I kind of connected with a couple of people to take a look at what was happening regarding drug policy in Baltimore City specifically. And these were local folks. One was a politician. And we were just batting some things around. But during that time, I had a very close friend of mine, Ed Totley, who was working undercover for the Maryland State Police. He had been doing that work for about 13 years. And I think many of the listeners probably remember this, but he was killed in October of 2000 working with the FBI down in Washington, D.C., when they were he was buying drugs from a major cocaine dealer. His death calls me to just pause for a moment and take a very closer look, or take a closer look at our drug policies and the violence that surrounded, you know, the illicit drug trade. Soon after Ed was killed, we had Michael Cowdery, a Baltimore City police officer who was killed on Harford Road when doing a field interview with a drug suspect. And then we had Kayvon Gavin. His car was rammed. Another officer, his car was rammed by a fleeing known drug dealer. And then in 2003, Sheila, we had the Dawson family of seven that was killed in East Baltimore when the local suspected drug dealer set their home on fire to send a message that you don't work with the police to get me and my crew arrested off the street corners. And it was that two-year period, which was very significant to my transformation and recognized the violence that followed the illicit drug trade. And we needed a change. It was the violence that brought me to this place of change. And then since then, we're now, I'm learning about addiction. I'm learning about overdose deaths. I'm learning about our booming prison industrial complex, basically on the foundation of these disastrous drug policies that we've had in our country now for a few decades.
A focus of LEAP's work is drug policy reform. Is the ultimate goal zero arrests for drugs?
The goal is to end prohibition, to regulate it and control it, to remove the profit motive from it, the illicit profit motive from it, which in turn would dramatically reduce the violence, which would then allow us to move this issue directly into the hands of our healthcare practitioners, our mental health practitioners, and to treat it as what it is regarding problematic use. What other health issue in this country do we attempt to address or solve with criminal justice policies, with arrest, you know, with incarceration? And I think that answer is none.
Is it possible to talk about drug policy reform without talking about police reform?
No, you can't. That's another downside of our drug policies, our current drug policies of prohibition, is that it has, not only has it been problematic for policing in developing and maintaining police relationships with our communities, but it's been problematic to the point of, how can I say it? It's caused so many other problems that we would not have, you know, regarding how we interact with our citizens. I mean, you can name it. The disparity issues around us enforcing these policies is dramatic. You know, the numbers are dramatically lopsided as it relates to Black and brown people being stopped, being arrested, being charged, being convicted, and even in sentencing, Blacks get longer prison sentences as it relates to drug charges. Now, this is what people need to understand. Across all demographics in this country, we all use and sell drugs at relatively the same rates. But when you look at the arrest and incarceration rates and more, dramatically lopsided as relates to communities of color, mainly Blacks. You know, in addition to that, it causes the men and women who are given the task of going out into, and I'm talking about police officers, going out into our neighborhoods and communities, you know, they're given these marching orders to go out here and get the numbers, make the arrests, lock people up. And they're the ones that have to interact with our citizens on a daily basis. And it does nothing, you know, for us to improve those police community relations. In some cases, well, just look at the gun trace task force, right? And the corruption that comes from that. That corruption was mainly because of the money that these officers were able to get from robbing people, from breaking into homes, from stealing, and their armed robberies. Civil forfeiture, where we're able to stop people, search them, take their property, without due process is another alarming problem in this country. It causes many of our police officers to literally put their oaths aside and to violate the constitutional rights of citizens. And this is the pressure that they are under because of the policies that have to be enforced and that these marching orders that are given to them by the higher-ups.
That's retired Police Major Neil Franklin, Executive Director of the Law Enforcement Action Partnership, a nonprofit dedicated to drug policy reform. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Franklin has been a state police narcotics agent and commander of the Baltimore Police Department's Bureau of Drug and Criminal Enforcement. As I mentioned, we spoke earlier with Brandon Soderberg, who reported about higher arrest rates for African Americans in Baltimore, even after changes in the law. Your reaction to his findings?
Well, I'm not surprised, because even though decriminalization of marijuana, not just in Maryland, but across this country, has resulted in a reduction in arrest numbers overall, the disparity rates are still there. So even in Colorado and California, where they now have legal adult use markets, when you look at the arrests that continue to be made for marijuana violations, the disparity issues are still there. We have so much work to do in police reform in this country. We have so much work to do in how we view race in this country and how we're dealing or not dealing with race in this country. You know, that's the ultimate foundation of the disparity issues that we're dealing with, is that we have not moved in the right direction for dealing with race in this country. So we have a lot of work to do there.
Well, you are African American, and for years you were part of that system before decriminalization laws. But looking at it from the inside, what do you point to as the germ of the cause of the disparities?
Well, number one, not just we in policing, but we as a nation were led to believe that we could actually be a drug-free society. It doesn't happen. You know, whether it's the caffeine from your coffee, whether it's the alcohol that you like to drink or the wine, you know, after work, you know, whether it's the medication that you take, you got to understand something. We are a drug-using society, and we always will be. The thing is that we have to create the best possible environment of education and treatment and all those things that go along with it. We have to create the best possible environment for drugs to exist. It's called harm reduction.
But I would have thought that decriminalization of marijuana would have been a first step toward the situation you envision, toward a situation of regulation and control. But it does not seem to be working out that way in terms of arrests.
We still have a long way to go, because another significant milestone will be when the federal government finally realizes that, you know what, the states aren't backing off of this. Let's do our part. Let's change the banking system. And that's a whole nother complicated discussion, but let's change the banking system. Let's change the scheduling system for marijuana. Because once they do that, then you're going to see each and every one of these states say, okay, we can now move forward. Let's do it. When you have the sweeping reforms that we've seen with the end of alcohol prohibition in 1933, then you'll see, you know, the dramatic reduction in arrests. We'll get away from these 10 gram, you know, personal use decriminalization thresholds that we have in Maryland, where most states have an ounce or more. Once the entire country moves to end the prohibition, to regulate marijuana, then, I mean, we're still going to have disparity issues, but at least the dramatic reduction in overall arrest numbers will have significant benefit. These drug policies, we should not be enforcing the way we are now in policing. There needs to be a system of regulation and control so that we, the police, can get back to protecting people from people robberies, rapes, murders, domestic violence that truly make a difference to every single person. Those are the things that are important, and that's where we, the police, should be, not trying to solve a public health crisis with handcuffs and prisons.
Neil, thanks for this conversation. Thank you.
You're quite welcome, Sheila.
Major Neil Franklin is executive director of the nonprofit Law Enforcement Action Partnership, LEAP, which works to reform drug and arrest policies and improve police-community relations. We have a link to more information about LEAP at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.